Back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis Ryer back with you alongside my second helping co-host and great friend, Brent Beard, First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, of course, also a voter for the most prestigious honor in all of collegiate athletics, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, hard to believe it, but we have week 10 of the SEC football season at our backs. You had bye weeks for some of the star power within the league, like Alabama, like LSU, like Texas, but we previewed this late last week, some intriguing matchups, some telling matchups where a team like Texas A&M was concerned coming off of that big home win over LSU last weekend, the previous weekend. Could the Aggies take the show on the road and what promised to be a tough matchup with the South Carolina Gamecocks? And here we are now. We talked about this late last week. You had one unbeaten SEC team going into the weekend. Well, there's none now, Brent.
Yeah. No, there's not. In this conference at this point, it just, frankly, the teams that are mature enough to go on the road after they get a big win and get another win after that, they're really heading for something. But that doesn't always happen in this league. It's just too much going on, just too many possibilities. But still, I mean, it is a and Travis and I share notes together, and when you've got a league right now, no undefeated, 2-5-1, 4-1, 2-3-1, 3-3-2, and 2-2. Travis, really, literally all over the place, is it not? As our show mascot comes on,
Chino wants to chime in, and also in our show chat, there's Tex Titer. By the way, we appreciate all of you tuning in live on this Monday morning, the Monday after Week 10 of action in the Southeastern Conference. Again, we're going to take you from early to late from last Saturday. Chino is going to help us do that as well as the official licensed show mascot. And you talk about going on the road in the league, and we'll talk more about this with Texas A&M and South Carolina coming up a little bit later, but we really hadn't seen A&M in this spot under Mike Elko to this point in terms of targeted, right? After the performance against LSU. I mean, A&M had road wins over Florida, over Mississippi State, I guess, but an entirely different animal. Little Chino pun there too, as he checks in. But no, we'll get into all the action, and where we'll start, Brent, is we will start with that that early game, Arkansas hosting Ole Miss. We wondered which Arkansas we would get in this home game, because we've seen Arkansas shock Tennessee at Reynolds Razorback Stadium. We've seen Arkansas get blitzed by LSU in that same venue. It was more of the latter, boy, as Lane Kiffin's Rebels rush out to a 35-10 halftime advantage. Never really looked back from there. Jackson Dart with an all-time performance, 515 passing yards, six touchdown passes. And the Rebels, we talked about this last week too, not a team that's probably going to run the ball consistently enough to be a real factor maybe in the college football playoff discussion when it really comes down to it. But against this Arkansas defense on Saturday, Jordan Watkins with a career day, catching the football, a couple of 100-yard receivers, really three, because you had Daquan Wright with 99 yards. But Lane has had some stinkers in Fayetteville, whether it was as the offensive coordinator at Alabama back in 2014. I remember Matt Corral for Ole Miss throwing, what, six interceptions in Fayetteville back in 2020? But this was a masterpiece for Lane in this Ole Miss offense.
You know, what's amazing about this game, several things. You mentioned the record, 555 yards. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Can't you imagine what that Arkansas – secondary room would be like this morning with the coaches. The previous record, Archie Manning, 540 versus Alabama in 1969. And by the way, I was at that game along with twin brother Brett. And Trav, the significance of that game was it was one of the early big-time, prime-time television games. And if I remember this right, Trav, it was Scott Hunter and Archie Manning. Yep. This was like 33-32 type mm-hmm. thing. Alabama won the game, but tremendous what Dart was able to do. And Travis, the other thing, how Ole Miss set this kind of record was amazing. Without Trey Harris,
yep.
They didn't have their left guard, Nate Capolo, and Henry Parrish, who you've talked about a lot. He left the game with a leg injury. So Trav, not only did they do it, but they did it without some of their better players.
Yeah, Archie did it on his own all those years ago. But even literally. Austin Simmons comes into the game for Ole Miss and goes 3 for 3 for 47 yards and a touchdown of his own. So 7 touchdown passes total for the Rebels in the game. I mentioned Jordan Watkins as a guy that would need to continue to step forward if Trey Harris was indeed out once again this week. And 8 catches for 254 yards and 5 touchdowns. I'd say he stepped up pretty good. Caden Lee with a big game, right? We mentioned. But this is one for all time for Jackson Dart. And, you know, you talk about numbers not always telling the truth. They say numbers don't lie. Well, they did for the Arkansas offense.
Yes.
Arkansas passes for 365, rolls up around 500 total yards, but it was mostly filler. Give Andrew Armstrong credit. He is a legit number one receiver for this Arkansas offense. He goes 6 for 135. Tight end Luke Haas, 5 for 77. But the run game was going to have to be a big part of it too for Arkansas. And without its top option once again this week, just not enough in that area.
And I'll be brief on this, but Trev, what about Arkansas right now? They're off this week. They're 5-4, likely going to a bowl game. That bodes well. Obviously, Bobby Petrino has made a difference with this team. Boy, the difference was the defense went in another direction, but they also caught a on fire Ole Miss team. Some room, and I'm just going to say rumors. I don't until we know more about it. But you know, when you have a loss like that, stuff always comes up. Rumors about Pittman maybe retiring at the end of the year, maybe Petrino or someone on the staff possibly taking over. We're not saying by any stretch of the imagination that is true, but look. I still say they've had a pretty good year. Crucial last few weeks coming up for the Hogs.
The season really comes down to Louisiana Tech. I think if you injected Arkansas fans with truth serum before the season and said, look, you're going to go 6-6. Would you take that right now with the schedule? Yeah. I think most of those folks would have taken 6 wins and a bowl trip for this Arkansas team. But You can't let the unthinkable happen. This isn't even a Skip Holtz Louisiana Tech team this year. So you have to win that game. You still get Texas at home. And as we talked about last week, the road game at Missouri to cap the regular season. Who knows what Missouri's going to look like. Really? But one thing that you can't do is get your quarterback sacked.
Right.
8 times. And that was the case for Talon Green and Malachi Singleton. You attempted just 28 passes in the game, and your quarterback was sacked 8 times. Now, if you push that up to 35, 40, that's still about once every 4 or 5 dropbacks. Mm-hmm. That's hard to sustain. Mm-hmm. Give Ole Miss credit. And with Ole Miss, of course, it's Georgia coming up next week in a mid-afternoon affair in Oxford. Mm-hmm. We'll get more into this later in the week. I still think this is a bad matchup for Ole Miss because you have to have some semblance of a run game that doesn't necessarily involve your quarterback. I thought Florida was able to get some of that in the game against Georgia on Saturday. We'll talk about that one coming up in just a little bit as well. Oklahoma, a feel-good performance, Brent Beard, from the Sooners at home against the visiting Black Bears of Maine. Jackson Arnold throws for 224 and 2 touchdowns, but I think the real story, if there was one, given the competition, is that Oklahoma ran the football for nearly 400 yards, and that's something That's something they really need to at least continue some semblance of. You're not going to run for 384 once you get back into the league, but the effectiveness of Javonte Barnes and Taylor Tatum and even Jackson Arnold when he has his number called.
Well, and this is a crucial week too for the Sooners. Certainly had to feel good about scoring that many points, even against the opponent. But and without looking, peeking too far ahead, these are two teams in Oklahoma and Missouri that play this week. That's going to be huge for them. Oklahoma 5-4, really needing to go to a bowl game. I mean, it's not going to be the bowl game probably their fans want necessarily at this point. Still dealing with getting some of these receivers back, replacing this the offensive line. They've had quarterback roulette. You know, like South Carolina, they can depend on their defense at this point too. So big win, but need a lot more help coming up over the next few weeks.
They do, and you still got, I think, Alabama and LSU on the schedule.
Yeah.
At the regular season. So to reach bowl eligibility, you'd certainly like to go ahead and take care of that sooner rather than attempt to do it later, for sure. The Auburn Tigers and the Vanderbilt Commodores. We talk about numbers not telling the story. Vanderbilt just 227 yards of offense, but still a winner by 10 at what was considered to be an absolute pit and still can be on occasion, as we've seen at Jordan-Hare Stadium. It wasn't a prolific game for Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia, but here's the thing that Vanderbilt does well. A couple of things that Vanderbilt does well, but offensively, is that side of the ball typically doesn't put the defense and the team in general in a bad place. Pavia makes a lot of highlight plays, but he doesn't turn the football over at an astounding rate. So against this Auburn team, take care of the football, maximize red zone opportunities, which Vanderbilt did, and then play great defense against an Auburn offense. Am I reading this right, Brent? Auburn did not have a red zone attempt in the game against Vanderbilt on Saturday.
That probably tells you all you need to know about that offensive side of the ball. But look, Trav, the Vanderbilt situation. Trav, let me see a show of hands on Interstate 65 going from Birmingham to Nashville about all the people that thought Vandy would be 6-3 right now. Wow. Bowl eligibility. And look, even and going way beyond that, maybe. Listen, I know you caught this. The thing to me that was so Vanderbilt about the game. Okay, the game's on the line. Vandy gets the ball, Trav, and they go. It was about 80-something yards in almost 9 minutes. Yeah. 9 minutes and score, and they basically put the game away. This is what you've said about them all along, and it really bears out. Trav, don't they 3 and 4 yard you to death? they're just absolutely machine-like in their efficiency. We'll get into Auburn in a minute, but I want to give them their due as to what they have done and how spectacular that is. And then this weekend they've got South Carolina. Is this the greatest home schedule Vandy's ever had in 1 year?
Suddenly a very intriguing matchup. When you looked at South Carolina at Vanderbilt back in, say, August, you thought, well, it'll be kind of that early to mid-afternoon game on SEC Network. Right. It'll get you to the games that you really want to see on what is going to be just a fantastic, or at least has the appearances of a fantastic Saturday coming up in the league. But Jarquez Hunter, after going for nearly 300 yards at Kentucky, carries 12 times for 50 yards. And it's a bad spot to be in with that Vanderbilt offense. Alabama found it out.
That's right.
Vanderbilt had the football in that game for like 40, 42 minutes. Alabama had it for like 18. If you are chasing Vanderbilt late, it's not a good place to be, not just because of the style of offense, but because it seems like Pavia and those guys are at their best when it's closing time. And once again, Pavia and the Commodores slam the door on an SEC opponent. Peyton Thorne, statistically, you look at it, 20 for 29, 239, a touchdown. He was sacked three times. But again, Vandy seems to avoid turnovers.
Yes.
And Vandy avoids negative plays. They don't find themselves. They play pretty clean football on the offensive side of the ball. And I just can't say enough about Pavia, Tim Beck coming in from New Mexico State. You know, Eli Stowers coming in also. But, boy, for Auburn, you just really wonder right now, okay, is it already that time
for Hugh Freeze?
Is the recruiting angle to this thing going to be enough for that fan base moving forward as you continue to accumulate losses here in 2024? The quarterback obviously isn't on campus right now. Now, I know they have a commitment from a very talented quarterback at Deuce that they figure could be the next guy as early as maybe next season. But, you know, you think about these promising freshman receivers, and I don't really see them all that much in the box score. I guess Malcolm Simmons, 3 for 39, but Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson were thought to be top three, top five prospects at their position for the 2024 cycle. They combined for two catches for 12 yards.
Yes.
Vanderbilt. Well, we're not in September. Kind of expect that maybe in September. We've seen greats like Amari Cooper and other guys in the first half of their freshman seasons not really light it up. But by the time the calendar shifted to mid, late October into November, those guys were typically coming on strong. So for Auburn, it's a mess right now.
Well, the couple of things I'll just say about Auburn real quick. Hugh Freeze, when asked about Jarquez Hunter having only two carries in the second half, I don't think he was banged up. He just looked gassed to me. What a comment that is.
Well, he is a body language expert.
He is, isn't he?
Because I can look at Hughes. I cannot watch Auburn and tune in Auburn. And if they show me Hugh, I can usually figure out how things are going based on body language. So got to defer to Hugh on that one for sure.
The most disturbing thing about them right now, Auburn guaranteed to finish with five or more SEC losses for a four straight year. That hadn't happened since 1927 through 30.
Ooh, somewhere I'm guessing in Central Florida, a head coach at another institution cackles. And that would be, of course, Gus Malzahn. Ooh. Hey, let's get into Georgia and Florida, the cocktail party. And boy, based on some of the viral clips we saw from the bleachers, it lived up to its reputation. Tough, tough look for the city of Jacksonville. And you don't like to see that stuff. Mm-hmm. You like to see it far more about the football game, especially for a series, as you noted prior to us coming on, just recently extended its partnership with the First Coast. But on the field, boy, I didn't have this game being 20-20 in the fourth quarter, especially if you told me DJ Lagway wasn't going to play more than a half of football. That's certainly the downside for the Florida Gators, seeing their star quarterback go down to a non-contact hamstring injury. We'll see how that is moving forward. But I continue to see this from the Florida perspective. Talked about this late last week, this narrative that I think Billy Napier, even if it's 5-7, is going to have a chance to hang around. Now, if Lagway can't play and it shows up in a poor, poor finish here down the stretch, I guess that could change. Yeah. I think even that could work to his benefit, because then there's the, well, he didn't have Lagway, right? Yeah. And I think there's some Florida fans willing to bite on that. But I know there are plenty of others, including some that are family of mine, that maybe don't feel that way so much.
Yeah. Well, there's still a lot of people who are not sure that this coaching staff can get them to where they want to go. But to their credit, I mean, and particularly they have not given up the Gators have not. So I give them some praise for that. Look, Lagway has really hurt them after being out. That was such a difficult situation with the turf. I still think one of the biggest injuries they've got right now is Montrell Johnson.
Yeah.
If they could get him back, I think that would make a, frankly, a humongous difference with them. Frankly, Florida just struggling to catch a break. We'll get into Georgia in a minute, but you mentioned the extension. I thought that was important. If folks have not heard, the game in Jacksonville next year in 26 will be in Atlanta, in 27 it'll be in Tampa, 28 back in Jacksonville through 31, which to me says, I'm curious what you think, Travis. To me, that says it's going to be here in Jacksonville indefinitely, and I think that's a good news. Some reports that I have seen a guarantee of up to $10 million to each school. Trev, you and I talked before that they would probably have to, if someone said, overspend in order to get the deal done. But look, you and I both know, for the money that brings in to this city, Trev, I still think that's a drop in the bucket, frankly. What we used to joke about, how underpaid Nick Saban was, making double digits in the millions. I think, regardless of what the money is for a neutral site game, it's worth it for this city and the future of this city.
Yeah, I think I saw the financial impacts, like $20 million a year
on
the area. Now, it extends beyond Jacksonville because St. Simon's and
Absolutely.
Sea Island and that up there, that's certainly a big Georgia stronghold that weekend. But it counts. It's sort of Jack's Metro if you want to extend it into South Georgia from Duval. So, absolutely. If you keep the money right, I think that's the lesson we've learned in all this.
Yep, it is.
You can keep situations like Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida. You know, Pops always says the winning team gets to get called first. So Georgia, Florida right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, with Florida, it's just what's Lagway status? I know there was some post-game optimism, actually, that perhaps it wouldn't be a season-ending type of situation. I guess we'll learn more of that from Billy Napier coming up here shortly. But what a tough situation for Aiden Warner, the freshman, the newcomer from Winter Park, to jump in there. I give the guy credit. I mean, obviously, it was an impossible situation for him. But I thought he handled it about as well as you could. And you talk about the running back situation for Florida. Even without Montrell, I thought Jacoby Jackson, Jaden Ball, you look at their numbers, 29 combined carries for 138. Yeah. So, again, when I think about, you know, Ole Miss coming up this week for Georgia, I don't think Ole Miss is even going to have something close to that level of success. Yeah. Give the Gators credit in a large part. I thought once Florida realized that, you know what, the zone read game really doesn't have a place without Lagway in the game and just kind of went more traditional run with the backs, that worked out well. But what about Georgia? Is this level of quarterback play, this sort of bipolar quarterback play with Carson Beck, is it good enough big picture-wise for this team to get to where it wants to go? Because he throws three more picks.
Yeah.
You think about some of the biggest stages he's been on this season. And I think about Tennessee coming up
down
the road, even though that game's in Athens. I don't like seeing that number, those three or more interceptions for Carson Beck. The run game was good enough. Nate Frazier did a nice job, the freshman, of jumping in there for a banged up Trevor Etienne. But defensively, I thought Georgia was okay. I mean, you look at the total yards for Florida and it looks really good, but you know, to kind of get gashed like they did there in the fourth quarter with a third string quarterback on the field,
really,
that was even a little bit surprising. But I know Kirby will be the first to tell you it's not easy. It's not easy in this league.
No,
and
no.
So Georgia gets the job done and heads to Oxford next.
Well, and look, I thought maybe the turning point of the game. And again, this is, this goes back on Billy Napier to get him a bona fide special teams coordinator. But I thought that botched field goal.
Oh, wow. Changed the game,
just inexcusable in so many ways, and what a difference that that can make.
It was a 10-point swing.
It was.
Really? Because you lose. You not only lose the three there.
Yeah.
The snap goes 30 yards.
Yeah,
it into did. Your own territory and sets Georgia up on the short field. It was a monstrosity.
I'm curious your take on Beck. Tell me what you see. I mean, Trav, right now, he's not seeing the field well. His footwork is not good. And
his body language is awful. I didn't expect Kirby Smart to need to give Carson Beck pep talks in November of this season. But after every one of these turnovers, Kirby is approaching and addressing Carson Beck in a way like you would expect him to do with a guy like Aiden Warner.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's probably my biggest concern.
Yeah.
Now, to me, Carson Beck is sort of, right now anyway, he's discount Trevor Lawrence. To me, he looks like Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Physically, his skill set is similar to Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And there are these times, like Trevor Lawrence at the end of the Eagles game yesterday, where there's the inexplicable newcomer-like turnover. Then you go, what? And so that's where I have Carson Beck right now. I still think he's capable of being what this team needs it to be to help it get to where it needs to go. But wow.
Yeah.
You know, some of the stuff we've seen, and then the look in his eyes sometimes is like done. He's done.
Yes.
So, you know, I worry a little bit about that going to Ole Miss, but you know what? There was a lot of that same talk before Georgia went to Texas.
Well, there was.
And then won the game with its lines of scrimmage. Now, Ole Miss defensively, we'll talk about this later in the week, is built differently now in that front seven where they can make it more about Carson Beck than they would have been able to in previous years. They're capable with this team of making Carson Beck have to do more than maybe even he would want to do right now.
Well, and Trav, what they've also got to do, right, they've got to get Trevor Etienne well.
Yeah.
He had that rib injury. And Etienne, where he helps them, to me, is not only in the run game, but he's one of their more reliable receivers. So
he's had a season similar to his brother in Jacksonville. I know he's making these Jaguar analogies with Georgia skill guys. But that's really what Beck and Etienne remind me of, in some ways, was Trevor – and Travis Etienne at Clemson.
Yeah, it's really.
Kind of uncanny in some ways, for me anyway. But, you know, I like Frazier, though. He does some things, though.
He runs hard, don't he?
He runs hard. He reminds me of Josh Jacobs
in
his running style. But then he'll do some stuff that just drives Kirby Smart nuts.
He really does.
That's the Gator Chomp throat slash at the end of his touchdown the other day. And as soon as he did it, I said, well, here comes Kirby. And I tweeted it. I think I tweeted it during the game. I don't watch every snap of Georgia football, but whenever I watch Georgia football, Kirby Smart is ripping Frazier's ass.
He is.
So, well, but he came through. He came through against Florida, no doubt.
He did. And I know he's trying to make him a better player. I think he sees something in him.
It's there.
That is worth going through it. But Trav, it was like when Nick Saban was coaching, when Kirby and Nick meet you about halfway to the sideline, that's not a good thing.
It's not. And it's going to be very interesting coming up this week in Oxford, because – we talk about previous situations that Georgia has found itself in. Ole Miss can be kind of like Tuscaloosa was.
Right.
Lane's got that thing going early on script and a little bit beyond.
Yes.
Ole Miss gets that early lead, hits some explosives. Can put Georgia in an uncomfortable spot on the
really
road.
Could.
No doubt about
Absolutely.
It. We'll talk about that one a lot more later in the week. UMass made the trip to Mississippi State to pick up a paycheck. UMass entered the game at 2-6. And then it was 10-0 UMass at the end of the first quarter. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness. Mississippi State going to drop a bye game again? We'd already seen this happen earlier in the season, but give Jeff Lebby's team credit. 35-0 run after falling behind 10-0. It's a win, I guess. That's the best thing you can say about it for Mississippi State, who, as a reward for a win over an FCS opponent, gets to go to Tennessee.
Right. Hey, Trev, the thing that's is more than mildly disturbing is on the Mississippi State defensive stats. There are 134 teams in Division I football. Well, that defense, is in about about three of those defensive stats are in the 130s.
Yeah, UMass ran for nearly 200 yards, really more than 200 before sacks were taken out. So, there's still going to be questions about that Mississippi State defense. Maybe Tennessee's the elixir, though, because Tennessee, as we're going to talk about, first half of games anyway, just really can't get going. No. That would be beneficial to Mississippi State in Knoxville. No doubt about that. Let's keep it moving through the evening hours from last Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. Sandstorm was in full effect early on Saturday night, Brent, at Williams-Brice Stadium. South Carolina got that start that it wanted in hosting Texas A&M. I'll give Texas A&M a lot of credit, too, because that really could have gotten bad quickly. A&M fought back with 17 second quarter points, and you got a 20-20 game going into the break, and you're thinking, well, now A&M has settled in. Now the adjustments will be made, especially on defense with Mike Elko. But boy, South Carolina wasn't having anything to do with it. How about nearly 300 rushing yards for the Gamecocks between Rocket Sanders and quarterback Lenore Sellers? Sellers threw it pretty good, too. I mean, 44 on 27 attempts, two touchdowns, wasn't sacked in the game. And boy, when you think about Texas A&M's defense, that may be the most impressive stat of all.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that totally. In South Carolina, set several records. Give Shane Beamer credit for what he has done. And boy, this Carolina defense is legit in the trap. I mean, Dylan Stewart, nine pressures in the game. This is coming from these young guys. That's a thing that is amazing. South Carolina right now, 5-3. You have got a very intriguing game. You've got Vandy, Missouri, Wofford, and Clemson. Travel that schedule, they could be 7-5, could they not?
It's that November magic from Shane Bima. We saw it a couple of years ago, remember? What was it? Tennessee and Clemson,
Florida
in November, Florida. Finished with a bang a couple seasons ago. Maybe it's going to be more of that November magic. Yeah. Again, interesting matchup for South Carolina now when you think ahead to this weekend. And that trip to Nashville now for the Gamecocks. You know, I'm sure a lot of Carolina fans thought before the season, we'll just walk right in there and be in good shape coming out with our seventh win of the season or so and just moving up that bowl pecking order. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't look like it'll be that easy. Texas A&M. No. With a bye week now, probably comes at a good time. Regroup, reset, get ready for this finishing kick that I think still pretty manageable for the Aggies, at least until you get to that home date on Thanksgiving weekend against the hated rival Texas Longhorns.
My concern right now for them would be how banged up is LeVay and Moss.
Yeah, LeVay and Moss. Yeah, that was rough.
It really was. Now, I've seen, you probably have too, some people say it may not have been as bad as it looked, but I can tell you, you and I have seen enough of that, and that didn't look good. So, certainly hoping he is going to be okay because he runs hard too. So, hopefully he'll be back as soon as possible.
Yeah, and see, this is where it adds up on you because you lose a back like Reuben Owens in the preseason. Yeah. And you think, well, we still got three or four guys. And now you get into mid-November, you lose another guy.
Absolutely.
Amari Daniels can go. Daniels can absolutely go. He averaged 6.4, had the 56-yard run That was very impressive. You got Emmett's kid, EJ Smith, is some depth, but Elko did say post game that it looked better post game than it did on the field at the time. So hopefully that is the case for Le'Veon Moss, because he is huge to that offense. And, you know, if I'm LSU watching that game, I'm kind of concerned, because we weren't able to do some things to A&M defensively, certainly that South Carolina, teams that are built differently, and probably as much as anything, emphasizes the stress that a running quarterback, a dual threat quarterback, can put on a defense, because Garrett Nussmeier's not that guy. He's not that guy.
No.
You know where to find Garrett Nussmeier. Mm-hmm. He's not going to beat you with his legs like, you know, Lenore Sellers can. So a tougher ask of that A&M defense, it seems like, and weren't able to answer the bell in Cola last Saturday night. Also in primetime Saturday night, the Tennessee Volunteers, another sluggish start, did score in the first half of this game.
Yeah.
Second quarter touchdown, but Kentucky with a 10-7 lead. This was a tight game throughout. In some ways, I give Kentucky a lot of credit after being just absolutely hammered over the final three quarters of that loss to Auburn the previous week. Brock Vandegrift completes 10 of 17, 123. That's a Brock Vandegrift line at this point.
Yeah.
That's what you're getting from Brock Vandegrift, even with the receivers like Dane Key and Berrien Brown.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to accept, but that's kind of Brock Vandegrift. Mm-hmm. You want Brock Vandegrift on your team, you know, intangibly and in a lot of ways, toughness, those things. But in terms of dynamic and prolific playmaking ability, that's not really him. Kentucky ran the football fairly effectively too, but give Tennessee credit. You know, you thought with the way Jarquez Hunter rolled it up against that Kentucky defense, this would be a good game for Dylan Sampson. He ends up going for 143 and a couple of touchdowns. Nico, 28 of 38, 292, a touchdown, no interception. So played pretty clean, and the Vols get the job done, and they get an even easier assignment coming up this week with Mississippi State headed to the Smokies.
I tell you this, the Tennessee defense has really played well this year. Held his first eight opponents under 20 points, the only defense so far to do that this year. But my stars, only four other SEC defenses, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia, who all won national titles, did that. Trail, by the way, for Van Buren, the Mississippi State quarterback, this is kind of ominous. This was Tennessee's eighth game, and only Alabama's Jalen Milroe remains the only starting quarterback to finish a game against the Tennessee defense.
Wow. Van Buren's a tough dude, too.
He is.
A young guy. He held up. He held up against Georgia on the road, so we'll see how he fares at Neyland coming up this week. But Tennessee in a great spot, as it's hard not to think ahead a couple Saturdays, right, to Athens, Georgia, with the Vols set to make that trip.
Absolutely. But they continue to improve even with Dylan Sampson having a first quarter fumble. Didn't have a carry in the second half, so he was in the doghouse.
He's done that a couple of times. He did it against Alabama, too. Got to take care of the football, no doubt about that. But Tennessee gets it done against the rival Wildcats. How about Miles Kitzelman, too, for Tennessee in this game Saturday night? The former Alabama, third or fourth or fifth tight end.
Yeah, really.
I think he's a starter now at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He's not bad. He had six catches for 97 yards against Kentucky.
It's a good night.
And a touchdown. So I think for Tennessee, they've had some key injuries already. So it kind of goes back to that for the Vols here down the stretch. I think Dylan Sampson, even with some of his reliability issues, he is so critical to that offense, I think. I think a guy like Cade Mays at the center position kind of falls into that category too. I know they've had some injuries at wide receiver, had some guys beat up. So, you know, kind of how they can sustain health against a team like Mississippi State. They're going to beat Mississippi State.
Yeah.
What you don't want to have happen with what's still on the bone for Tennessee is injuries to key guys in some of these games like that. Lance Hunter here in the show chat, he chimes in, Brent, about the importance of what Georgia still has on the table. It's a good point by Lance. Says Georgia could fall behind with a SEC loss. Mm-hmm. Alabama has the tiebreaker. Well, yeah. Head-to-head, that, no doubt about that. If they're if they're tied, I guess it gets into, from that standpoint, with what you talked about from the outset of the show, Brent. Hell, you could have like a
really
four-way tiebreaker at two losses or something if it comes down to it. But the games, as much as we worry about the importance of the regular season, the integrity of the regular season, taking a hit, the games, it, it feels like playoff mode already in the SEC as we go into next week and beyond. You got Alabama going to LSU. You know, Lance talking about Bama has, having the tiebreaker. Well, only if Alabama goes on the road and beats LSU. So some big, big items on the menu still for these teams.
Well, and Trav, and this is a good, that is a great example of why Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, the commissioner of the Big Ten, both those conference, Trav, they're trying to get four guaranteed spots for their for the teams in their conference. They realize, and what you said is just a great example of that. With all these teams bunched up, that might not happen this year.
No, it might not, because you got some teams that are going to beat each other down the stretch, and then you're going to get into some logjam situations. Then you got some teams in some other leagues like Indiana.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
if Indiana is 11-1 or 11-2, what do you do with the Hoosiers?
Really?
Under Kurt Cignetti and just this sort of magical, magical first season, the former Alabama assistant doing a great job at in Bloomington in his first season. So, so much around the country still. Also from the Group of Five perspective, how that sort of plays out.
Yes.
Big 12. Clemson helped the SEC.
Well, they did.
On Saturday night. I don't think there's much doubt about that. So Louisville going in there and just taking apart Dabo's Tigers. So the point being, still, even though we're getting into mid-November-ish, still so much that can happen. We've seen that.
Oh,
we saw that even with the two-team or the four-team, but with 12,
One of the things that got my attention for our viewers, Travis and I have a real affinity for the military schools. Now, here's Army. Here's Army 8-0 for the first time since 1996. What really gets my attention is, Trav, Army has one turnover so far in the whole season.
Running that triple option, man. Now, you got to pitch it. So, you could, and even on the fullback mesh, you know, the quarterback pull or keep or give. That's discipline, my man. That's West Point. That's what they pride themselves on at places like Army, Air Force, and Navy. And we do, we got the Army Navy game coming up in about a month. Always love that one. So a lot to talk about still. We certainly hope you'll continue to join us. If you haven't subscribed to our channel here, Ryer on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. Also, there's a notification bell right there if you would like to, and we would like you to go ahead and hit that as well. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops right here on Ryer on YouTube. And if you would give us a thumbs up, a like, that would help us out, and we would appreciate that immensely as well. Brent, anything else before we get out of here on a Monday morning?
Well, there's going to be a lot to look to. And I, one of the things I thought was interesting, I give David Hell of ESPN credit for it. And this is what we thought would happen with the 12-team playoff. Now, look, this is stretching it a bit, and we understand that, and I won't belabor the point, but he's saying right now in November, there may be 33 teams that are still worth monitoring for the 12-team playoff if certain things went correctly. So, look, this is a boom for TV. It's a boom for fan interest and all that goes along with it. So, and you said this a few minutes ago, but we are very much – already in playoff mode as far as thinking if A happens and B happens, then C means my team's going to the playoff. So that's going on with a lot of teams, and that's why they want it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the TV, that's how they want it.
Absolutely.
More reason to keep us engaged.
Yes.
As if we needed another reason. Yes. But hey, you know what else today is too, right? College basketball season.
I'm really excited Hoops. About that too.
Hoops. So look, yes. Big Blue Nation. I know it hasn't been that sort of Mark Stoops kind of year, but and I know Cal's at Arkansas these days, but it's a holiday in the Commonwealth. No doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah, that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Brent, as always, man, a lot of fun with you here on Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers, the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. We will rejoin later this week. Talk about a weekend we have coming up. Boy, from noon to the next day, probably. Yes. That slate coming up, we're going to have fun with. We'll do that coming up later this week.
Trav, enjoyed it. We look forward to talking later in the week then.
Sounds good. For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. It is Second Helping. And until next time, so long, everybody.